Tonight, hey, it was BYOG, bring your own guts.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game. He ran the missed field goal back. He ran it back 109 yards. They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Caught, racing, touchdown, Nittany Lions. We've got a ball game in net time.
But, sweetheart, this pick is strictly business.
Hello, Heisman.
And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast. Josh Parcell, Rossi Three Stacks here, back for another week. I said it at the end of the podcast on Tuesday, Ross, but this feels like the real week one. We're calling it week three, but we got the SEC back. We got more than one Big 12 game this time. We've got, I think, a full slate of ACC games except for Notre Dame-Wake Forest. So this feels like the first real weekend of college football, Ross. How are we feeling?
Dude, absolutely. Yeah, it's like when the seasons change. I mean, there's the official time that the season changes. Like when you go from fall to winter, it's not technically until like December 21st, but like we all know that it's actually on Thanksgiving. It's exactly that. Like college football season, I guess, has started already. Those were exhibitions. What we have seen thus far is the preseason. The SEC is back. We got some other conferences on the horizon. The season actually starts this weekend.
We got a lot to talk about, man. I hope we can get this all in the episode tonight, because just about an hour ago, we're recording this on Thursday night. The Pac-12, they're back.
Yeah, they're back, baby.
We got to give a shout out to one of our favorite listeners, our good friend Bob. I can't take credit for this, but he nailed it. So the Pac-12 comes back, and I mean, it's kind of a big deal, I guess. But our friend Bob texted us and said, it reminds me of the scene in Parks and Rec when Ron Swanson has 94 meetings and he says they need everyone to work, even Karen. And then when Jerry offers to help, they say, no, we don't need you. And then he can go home. The Pac-12 is the Jerry Gergich of college football. Does anybody even really want them there? That's the question we need to be asking right now, because I don't think anybody even cares the Pac-12 is playing football.
Yeah, didn't Oregon already have some guys opt out? I guess a bunch of schools have.
So,
although we're seeing people start opting back in,
right,
which I'm encouraged by. It's awesome. Rondell Moore is back. He's so fun to watch. That's going to make Purdue a lot of fun.
Yep.
He single-handedly makes them fun. But, yeah, it's a good point about the Pac-12. I mean, interestingly, this year, probably of any year, I kind of am interested in watching some of them. But who knows? It's weird. So are they eligible for the playoff? I think I read no.
No, they are. Yeah, they are.
They are eligible for the playoff.
So the way that this schedule is going to work is they're going to try to play seven games in 7 weeks. And they're going to start November 6th, and the season's going to run through, I believe, the 19th. I'm going to have to double-check that, but that's when everybody else's is running through. So I would assume that's when the Pac-12 is running through, which would mean that they would play their conference title game the same weekend as the ACC. The ACC technically has it still set for the 12th, but let's be honest, they're going to move that back. UVA plays Virginia Tech on the 12th of December, so they're going to have to push games into that week.
I think Notre Dame Wake got scheduled for that day also. Yeah, no, they almost like 95% likely they're going to push it to
right.
the 19th. I agree.
So it seems as if we're going to wait in, like, December 19th is the big day. If everybody can finish their season by the 19th, then we should get a regular playoff. I mean, at least where everybody's eligible. Larry Scott was on a conference call tonight and said that the committee has made no plans to push back the playoff, which I think is weird. I think that
And
first of all, I don't really take a lot of stock into Larry Scott. if Greg Sankey was saying this, I would probably believe it a little bit more. But I don't know. I don't even know if the committee knows who Larry Scott is. I mean, it's been four years since.
Larry Scott is sitting at home right now, and like his friends or like the kids in his class are like out, all hanging out, and he's like texting him like, what are you guys doing tonight? And they're all just like, oh, nothing, anything, Larry Scott. And Larry Scott's like, I guess no one's doing anything.
Yeah, we'll stay in. No, that's cool. No, sounds fun.
Meanwhile, they're all out partying and making plans.
yeah, that's exactly right. So we'll see. I mean, I'm excited for – I'm joking about the Pac-12. It's funny. But, I mean, Oregon is the one team in the Pac-12 that really felt like they had a chance to make the playoff in normal year. And I'm curious to see what happens because Penei Sewell is the best left tackle in America. He opted out, but you do see guys opting back in. Rondale Moore, as you said, from Purdue, that was just today. Rashad Bateman earlier this week, we talked about that briefly on the pod on Tuesday for Minnesota. Ohio State getting a couple guys back, Wyatt Davis and Sean Wade, who's one of the top corners in America. He opted back in. So you're seeing guys opting back in the Big Ten. I don't see why you couldn't have that in the Pac-12 too. And these players do want to play. There's definitely a debate that can be had about, you know, how much some of those guys have to gain by playing, especially a guy like Sewell, who Sewell doesn't have to play a snap this year. He's going to be a top five pick in the draft next season, but these kids do want to be, they want to play. I mean, they go to college for a reason. And obviously there's an intense debate about getting paid, and heck, Congress put out an NIL bill today. So I mean, that's a whole other podcast. We could spend all could spend all night talking about that, but we got to talk about the games this weekend. We got to start talking about the SEC being back and so much more. So let's dive into this. Let's talk about the SEC first. Well, before we get into games and stuff later, let's talk about just our favorite storylines in the conference. So, you know, the SEC, obviously national champions last year, LSU surprises us all. One of the most dominant seasons ever by Joe Burrow for a quarterback. And yet they replace so much. I think Alabama, Ross, is not only the best team in the SEC, which isn't breaking any news, but I think Alabama is the number one team in America. And not a lot of people, you know, pre-pandemic, not a lot of people had them number one. Most people had Ohio State one or Clemson. I mean, those two, I mean, Clemson certainly with Lawrence and Etienne back, that was going to always have them as one or two. Ohio State bringing back Justin Fields and so many guys on talented players on defense. Like Ohio State just, they've restocked, right? Alabama, in terms of Alabama standards, is almost out of sight, out of mind. Like they lost multiple games last year. After Tua went down, Alabama, their national championship hopes, their playoff hopes, for the most part, were gone. And people, you know, they kind of forgot about Alabama as much as that's possible. And then coming into this year, they feel exactly to me like every Alabama team we've ever seen until Tua got there. Because Mac Jones is fine. I actually think Mac Jones can be pretty good, and people are probably discrediting him a little bit because he's not Tua. But Mac Jones is fine. And then you look at that entire team from Najee Harris at running back to Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle at receiver and Alex Leatherwood on the offensive line, Landon Dickerson, who both could be high draft picks. Leatherwood's probably going to be a first-round pick. Defensive line, you got LeBrian Ray. You got Dylan Moses at linebacker. You got Patrick Surtain in the secondary. I mean, they're just load. They're going to have 10 guys go in the first 100 picks in the draft. And am I really supposed to downgrade them that much because Mac Jones is at quarterback? I'm not. I think Alabama is going to win the national championship. And I think they are far and away the best team in the SEC. Even as much as I like some of the other teams in the East, I think Alabama is the clear-cut favorite in this conference.
Yeah, man, it's crazy that as you're saying a lot of this stuff, it's even creeping into my mind, like, man, this is a strong take. And Josh is going out on a limb a little bit, and I'm not being ironic about that. And just how we've reacted to Alabama not winning the national title just, like, twice. And we kind of forget that they are a dynasty and that they have the number one or two recruiting class every single year, and they are just absolutely stacked and loaded everywhere. I think it also speaks to how good Clemson and Ohio State have been, though, that we have somehow in our mind like kind of downgraded Alabama. But no, I like that. I do think they are the best team in the SEC, and I kind of feel like they're due. I think this is a situation where Saban is going to be able to do all of the Nick Saban stuff, motivate them. I think they kind of come out and take out some frustration on everybody they play. So I do not disagree with you at all. Alabama, I think, is the best team in the SEC.
I mean, I think even if you just compare them to Clemson side by side, yeah, they have a huge advantage at quarterback. Clemson does, but running back, it's basically a lot. Like, I like Etienne a lot. I think he's incredibly talented, but Najee Harris is right behind him.
Yeah.
I mean, Najee Harris is a top 50 pick probably in next year's draft. After Etienne, he's going to be the next running back maybe off the board. Receivers, Clemson's got a lot of talent, but they're young. Alabama's bringing back experience at that spot and, you know, losing Ruggs. And no other team in America could lose Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs and feel like they still have one of the best receiving corps in the country, but Alabama does. And, I mean, like I said, you could go through the rest of the team, even defensively.
For sure.
Clemson's loaded. I mean, this is not a knock on Clemson, but I just think people have forgotten Alabama was incredibly banged up last year on defense. Dylan Moses didn't play at all. They lost a couple of other players on defense as well. And then this team with Tua, this blew my mind even last year. Tua played on one leg in that game against LSU, and they nearly won. I mean, they pushed LSU to the brink like nobody else did. LSU, and I know LSU kind of got better as it went, but LSU, I mean, railroaded Oklahoma and Clemson and in the SEC championship game had their way. Like, they cruised through the last, you know, half of their season, except for Alabama, and that was with Tua Tagovailoa, who couldn't even walk off the field on his own power, you know, after that game was over. So I just think people are really selling Alabama short. They're obviously healthier, and I like them a lot. I think they're going to win it all.
A lot of value in that take right now, because I think they're undervalued for the first time ever, or in a long time.
Give me your favorite storyline.
Well, I mean, it's not even football related. My favorite storyline for sure is Mike Leach and Lane Kiffin in the Egg Bowl.
Yes.
Two just really fascinating characters that are fun to talk about. And you know there's going to be some funny press conference moments and probably just some goofy stuff that happens in the rivalry along the way, as there always is. But for a rivalry that's had so many just classic funny moments here the last couple of years, to then add Mike Leach and Lane Kiffin, let's be honest, neither Ole Miss or Mississippi State is going to contend in the SEC. They're going to be average at best. But that being said, they are two really interesting stories right now just because of those guys. So I'm going to be fascinating to watch that. I think the two of them are actually kind of friends. I sort of wish they were like hated rivals, like heated rivals. That would make it even more fun. I think they're actually buddies, but they go about it all in very different ways. I'm just excited to have Lane Kiffin back in the SEC. I think Mike Leach in the SEC in general is a hilarious fit. That's my favorite storyline by far. Forget the football side. From a fan's perspective and somebody who's going to get to talk about this stuff a couple times a week, oh my gosh, that's going to be amazing.
Well, and if it weren't for an Ole Miss player peeing in the end zone last year, we probably never get this, which is the best part of all of it. There's no better way for this rivalry to start than with a fake dog peeing on a fire hydrant in the end zone of the Egg Bowl. Incredible.
So good. Joey Freshwater.
We'll spend more time on this in a minute because we've got them in the buy the boat picks. But you mentioned it, the curious fit of Mike Leach in the SEC. This will be the ultimate test of whether or not Mike Leach is a big time college football coach, because, you know, there's a lot of people who love Leach, that he has his detractors, that it's, you know, it's gimmicky. It can only work in the Big 12, or, you know, it works in the Pac-12 with a school like Washington State where, yeah, you're going to put up a lot of points and it's going to be fun, but you're never really going to contend in an elite conference. I'll say this, you know, Mike Leach, when he was at Texas Tech, he got a lot of credit for building that program, and that's great and everything. He only had double-digit wins once, and it was that loaded 2007 team that had Graham Harrell and I mean, Michael Crabtree was the stud of that team. They never really broke through that ceiling otherwise, and even at Washington State, I mean, you had, you know, loaded, you know, Luke Falk and those other guys, Gardner Minshew, who we're watching right now on Thursday Night Football. But
we will not tolerate. We will not tolerate any River Craycraft.
That's our boy. That's our boy. So, yeah, this is going to be a big test for him. I mean, if he can go into the SEC and let's face it. I mean, no. Are they going to win the conference? No. But Dan Mullen did get that program to a point where they were in the upper half of the SEC West. Uh-huh. And,
If Mike Leach can do that, that I think that is – I think it's possible, but it's going to take a lot. And, I mean, the SEC West is as good now at the top as it's been, with LSU now, I think, cementing itself back again as a national championship favorite. So we got those. Let's talk about the SEC East here. So Florida, surprisingly, wins the preseason poll, gets the nod from the media earlier this week as the favorite to win the SEC East. Now, Alabama dominated the conference. That 77 of, I think, 94 votes, I want to say it was, maybe 95, but Florida squeaks out the vote from the media to win the SEC East. I'll be honest, I don't see it. I like Florida. I think it's going to obviously come down to that Florida-Georgia game in Jacksonville, but I just think Georgia is much more talented across the board, and if Georgia can settle its quarterback situation before they get to that Florida game, and they've got a month and a half to do it, then I think Georgia's the better football team by that time. They don't even have to beat Alabama. They've just got to avoid losing everywhere else, and then, you know, go into that Florida game, beat Florida, and Georgia should win the SEC East. I think people overrated. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. I think people overrated the loss of Jamie Newman. I think Newman is a nice player. I don't think he's anything special. I don't think he was going to transcend that program. I did think JT Daniels would get cleared to play. If he's not cleared, then this falls on Dwan Mathis. We'll find out this weekend. But they settled the quarterback situation by, you know, 6 weeks in. I think Georgia still wins the SEC East. They're my favorite.
Yeah, I agree. I was surprised that Florida was kind of the pick there. It's hard to pick against Georgia until proven otherwise. Like, Kirby's got them at that level, I think, where they have earned the benefit of the doubt. They are only recruiting better and better as the years go on. I mean, their recruiting classes have just been outrageous, especially on the lines and linebacker, defensive back. I mean, they're going to be awesome. They have some just straight-up hog mollies. They have some studs that are going to be running the ball. It's similar. It's not exactly the same as Alabama because what you're saying with Mac Jones, but I think JT Daniels is a more dynamic player than Mac Jones, but he doesn't really have to be. He kind of just has to be, like, a little better than Jake Fromm was, and they're going to be right there with the chance to win. So I think a Bama-Georgia rematch is my pick for the SEC championship as well.
Yeah, and I think Alabama wins, you know, coming up in a couple of weeks when they play. But, you know, by the time they rematch, if Georgia's figured out the quarterback spot, could be a game. I still like Alabama to win the whole league for sure. So let's go to your storyline in the SEC. Because I know where you're going with this, and I am in complete agreement with you.
Yeah, so Tennessee, I think, is going to be a really interesting team. They are kind of the forgotten team in the SEC East behind Georgia and Florida, who have emerged as, you know, the two best right now. But Tennessee is a top 25 team again. And I think subsequently their fans, God bless them, are as delusional as ever. And I think probably think they're in that same tier as Florida and Georgia. But my question though is, will this Tennessee team that's top 25, will they even go 500 this year against the schedule they have? And I think maybe not. I think there's a real chance that they go 4-6 again, and we get to all laugh at Tennessee and their top 25 expectations and the next year's the year kind of thing, like we see every single year with Tennessee since 1998.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they get to 500. I think this team is good enough to get to that point. But the schedule is brutal, man. I mean, yeah, they're 16th, but six of the teams they play are ranked right now. They get Alabama, Georgia, and Florida, and Auburn, and A&M. Five of them are ranked in the top 10. Now, A&M is not really a top 10 team. Once the Big Ten comes back, Pac-12, that's a you know, top 15 team. But either way, you're still playing five teams that are probably amongst the top 15 in America. Tennessee is not ready to win at that level yet. And yeah, Tennessee fans are going to be nuts. That's the biggest problem at Tennessee, is just the fans having any level of patience to give a coach a chance to build and not think that it's going to take 2 years and they're going to be knocking off Nick Saban.
Right.
They can't hang with Alabama. I don't think they can hang with Georgia. I do think they can hang around with Auburn. They certainly, I mean, they'll be favored probably against Kentucky. It'll be a small line, but they'll be favored. And then, yeah, I mean, A&M, we'll see how A&M looks, but they do have to come to Knoxville. So which I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know what that means this year, but at least it's a home game. So I think Tennessee, I think they beat South Carolina this weekend. I think they beat Missouri. That's two wins. You know, you get Arkansas, that's definitely a third win. Vanderbilt is four. So that's four right there. So you only got to win one of those games against the six ranked teams if you take care of business against the rest.
Yeah.
I think they get to 500, maybe even 6-4. But, you know, how do Tennessee fans react to 6-4? That's going to be a big question. This program was in shambles at the beginning of last year. People were ready to move on from Pruitt already in year two. I mean, lose to Georgia State, lose to BYU and in the final moments, and fans were livid. But, you know, they turned it around. They won six straight to end the year. Decent. I mean, Kentucky was a good win. See, the other thing about this Tennessee thing, and this is why them being ranked 16th, I think, is ridiculous. Look at the games they won. They beat a bad South Carolina team. They beat Kentucky was the only good win. Then they beat a struggling Missouri team. They beat a bad Vanderbilt team. And then they, you know, beat Indiana by one in a bowl game. I mean, it's not like Tennessee beat anyone in that stretch. That this is kind of like what we were talking about with Louisville the other day, where Louisville gets a lot of wins and the record looks good. And you're thinking, okay, return a lot of pieces, won games. But then you look at, okay, what happened against the good teams? Well, you lost to Alabama by 22. You lost to Georgia by 29. You lost to Florida by 31. They weren't even remotely competitive against those teams. So I do think that Tennessee is certainly getting a little too much love. But even in that six games, I think they win one of those six, maybe two. Maybe it's a Kentucky. You know, maybe it's A&M. But I'll get them to 5-5. But Tennessee fans, that may not be good enough. And they just gave a contract extension to Jeremy Pruitt. So I don't know what the heck they're doing in Knoxville.
We'll see, man. As much as I like to rag on Tennessee and Tennessee fans because they're crazy. But, I mean, they're crazy in the way every team, I'm sure, wishes their fans were. Like, I mean, well, that's not necessarily true. But they care a lot. Their only issue is they care too much. And college football, I think, is more fun when Tennessee is good. I think they are one of those teams, for whatever reason, it's kind of fun having them around. So I hope they do go 6-4 plus. I hope they're really competitive in a lot of those games because it'll be fun to watch.
Do you think that's a good job?
We talked about this, I feel like, last year. And I had initially said yes, because I think it's easy to recruit there. And I think having a passionate fan base is something that not every school has. But you kind of convinced me that maybe not really, just because of the unrealistic expectations. And also having to play right now, it's not a great job because of how good Georgia is.
Yep.
And you really can't, it's going to be so hard to beat them and knock them off. And then not even to mention Florida and anything else, you know, crossover games in the SEC. So right now, I don't think it's a very good job because you have a giant hurdle. Historically though, yes, because I mean, you can win a national championship there. And there's a finite number of programs where that is true. So, yes, it's a good job, but it comes with a lot of issues as well.
I mean, we saw this a few years ago where it felt like most of the great head coaching candidates went to other leagues because, I mean, unless you're getting a cream of the crop job in the SEC, you're just trying to knock off Saban and Kirby Smart. And if you don't,
you're going to get fired in a couple of years.
You're done in 3 or 4 years. I mean, I guess you get a nice buyout. I mean, I guess that's great. But, you know, Tennessee, Texas A&M, you're getting paid. You got resources. But the mountain is so steep that I would almost rather take a job at, let's say, I don't know, I'm just trying to think of a school like in the ACC. I mean, heck, I would even argue that this is probably a little too extreme, but I would almost rather coach at Georgia Tech than I would Tennessee, because Georgia Tech's actually a tough example because they have to play Clemson and Georgia every year. But like that middle of the road, like expectations aren't too great, but it's winnable. You can recruit there. Those kind of schools, I'd rather be there than Tennessee because unless I go 10-2, fans are going to wonder what's wrong. Ever since Fulmer left, they've had such a hard time keeping coaches around there. I mean, there's been a lot of other problems. It's not like they hired the best coaches in the world, but.
Sure.
It's tough. I don't know. It's just a thought. I guess you already know that. We talked about it because my take is that Tennessee is not that great of a job. You got to be able to win, but you also have to have a fan base that's willing to accept, you know, being patient as the build happens. Let's move on. Let's talk about the thing we didn't get to last week or on last pod on Tuesday, So the Big Ten is rolling out Champions Week, which is awesome. And at the end of the season,
so cool.
They're going to play every team in each division is going to play the team from the other division with the same place in the standing. So you'll get your championship game, but you get 2v2, 3v3, 4v4, and so on. But you and I both are onto something similar, I think, in terms of how we can build on this. Because I love the idea from the Big Ten. What was your reaction when you saw this, and how do you think we can do even more?
Yeah, so really cool. Immediately my mind went to, wow, the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12, and I guess the Pac-12, welcome back, guys, all need to do something very, very similar. It would be so cool. We'll use the ACC as the example because it's closest to home. If you had, in a normal year, just as an example, say you had Louisville and Miami finished second in the Coastal and the Atlantic and the Coastal,
yep,
respectively. They play each other. My plan, Josh, is then you are matched up with another conference, and the winner of each slot's game would then play the loser of the other conference in that slot. And the benefit of winning the game is you get a home game against the opposing conference if you win your intra-conference game. So in that scenario, Miami wins the number two matchup. They get a home game against the loser of the Big Ten's number two matchup. And I'm envisioning that basically taking place of the bowl game system we have right now.
Okay, I see what you're doing. I got it.
Those kind of become your bowl games. Like, by winning my number two seed matchup in Champions Week, I have earned my school another home game where we get to host Purdue, whoever it is, the loser of the Big 12, the Big 10 matchup. That probably wouldn't be that, but you get what I'm saying.
Right, Michigan. Right.
More revenue for the school. Get to sell tickets, recruiting event, all this. It's a huge advantage. Comes really, really cool to win that game and get to host that. And then what I would like to see is you take what is our existing bowl system, because we've now added that extra exhibition style game in the fall. You take what is our current bowl game system, where you play teams from other conferences and kind of destination based places, and do that during the spring. So you have spring bowl games. At the end of spring practice, you do exhibition, made-for-TV kind of stuff. Get some of your young guys' experience. It's all kind of just a party, celebration thing. But that gives us something. It's a mini spring football season to keep us interested year-round. Not that we wouldn't be anyway. I think it's a win-win-win all around. And by adding in something like this conference Champions Week, it gives you a way to extend the season a little bit in the fall and give you something to push to the spring.
So I love that. And it actually goes one step past what I've wanted to do for a while, which is that you basically, and we've learned this year that you can schedule football games, less than 12 years in advance. It is possible. So
imagine that.
I know. And I've said for a while now that I would love to see just the number two in the ACC is slotted to play the number two in the Big Ten next year, right? We're going to go down the line, and you're basically, instead of scheduling, specific teams, you basically say, all right, it goes to the conference where the conferences say, all right, our number two is going to play your number two, it doesn't even have to be the same ranking. It could just be like, hey, this year our two is going to host your six or whatever. And you try to create, because one of the biggest problems in college football is the inequity of schedules from conference to conference, right? And if, let's say, Auburn plays North Carolina, which they were supposed to play in the regular season this year, let's say both of those teams end up having great years, and whoever wins that game has a really strong quality win at the end of the season. But more importantly, whoever loses has a really high quality loss, right? Well, in the Pac-12, let's just take Washington, for example. Washington, I don't know who they had on their non-conference this year, but historically Washington doesn't play a really difficult out-of-conference schedule. What if at the end of the year Washington is undefeated and Auburn has one loss to UNC, but they, I guess if they won the SEC, they'd be in. North Carolina has one loss, right, and won their league, and it's an undefeated Pac-12 versus a one-loss ACC North Carolina. does North Carolina get penalized now because they lost to a good team? It makes it harder to compare one team to another. But if you had said before the season, hey, the Pac-12 champ from the year before is going to play the number two team from the Big Ten this year, now all of a sudden you're – always there's going to be surprise teams that the year before were in eighth and all of a sudden surprise us and are, you know, a top three team the next year. But by and large, if you're a top three or four team in your league one year, you're probably going to be near the top the following year. And it's going to give us a chance to see you play against another team that's going to test you. And it's going to eliminate these wildly, you know, different, you know, strength of schedules at a conference. I think it would help a lot.
Right.
And what your idea makes it even better because now you're playing for it. I mean, you literally are playing for the opportunity to have the game be at home and you know, to determine who you're going to play the following year. I actually think that's awesome. I'm all for it. The bowl game thing is interesting, too. Danny Cannell has had a really cool idea for a while about playing bowl games in the fall as the season openers. And that's a different story than what we're talking about. But instead of playing them in December when no one cares, make them the season kickoff. Count them towards the regular season, you know, record, but make them the season opener the following. How awesome would opening weekend be if the entire first weekend of the college football season or the first even two weekends, you split them up, were the games we're normally getting in December? I would love that.
Yeah, that's really cool. And it is similar to this idea. I mean,
right.
You could do something a lot like that. Yeah, I like that a whole lot. I mean, college basketball basically does their version of that. You start the year with these, as I've learned recently, they're called multi-team events. But you start the year basically with your Maui Invitationals and your Battle for Atlantis and those kind of things. They would be a similar kind of idea for football. And, like, to make people happy, you could even schedule some destination like events like that, just like you're doing, like bring a couple teams maybe to the same place. I don't know, you could have a lot of fun with it. It'd be an awesome way to kick off the year. Couldn't agree more,
man. I'm just thinking about the kind of matchups you could get every year. I mean, and you would get matchups that you never really are used to seeing. I mean, we've seen, I don't know, Ohio State play Oklahoma a bunch at this point. Like, we've seen some of those get put together, but imagine getting,
right,
just making it up, like Alabama, Texas. Right.
Yep.
Like we saw it in a national championship game, you know, once. But other than that, you don't get them in the right. I actually think Alabama and Texas have scheduled a game in like 7 years. But, you know, there are games like that you don't normally get to see, that all of a sudden Miami playing Michigan. Right. If it's the number two in the ACC, number two in the Big Ten 1 year. And that's a game you get. You would get some games that you've never seen before, which I think is awesome. And I think it's cool. And you would have a little conference pride at stake too, which is awesome. The other thing, I know you probably agree with this. You need an even number of conferences. Like, to do this with five conferences is kind of tough. If we want to include Jerry, then we've got to find a partner for the Pac-12. We don't have to spend a lot of time on this, but I'm finally at the point, especially for something like this, but I'm cool with the American being a power six.
Definitely.
I'm cool with that. I mean, they've proven it. They're not, you know, they're not as strong as the SEC, obviously, or the Big Ten. But is the gap really that wide between the American and the ACC? Probably at the bottom of the league a little bit, but the top five teams in the American, they don't have a Clemson, but they're strong enough, I think, to compare with the ACC or even some years the Pac-12, with the way that Houston and Memphis and UCF have played. I'm totally cool with the American being included in this. Moving forward, college football could be changing. I would love to see the American get a little bit more, you know, love in that conversation.
It'd be awesome.
Let's go on. Let's do our new segment. So, Ross, as you know, we are big daily fantasy guys. We do DraftKings, Craft King, and Derek King, although I think we're going to just go DraftKings, Craft King from now on Tuesdays. So, Thursdays, we're going to do a new segment, and this is all you. This is Rossi's Three Stacks. Take it away.
Yep. So, if you're unfamiliar with daily fantasy sports, or I guess fantasy sports in general, the concept of a stack, just to quickly explain, is when you combine your quarterback with the people he's going to be throwing to. So your quarterback with a receiver and or tight end, because there's some correlation there. If you think X quarterback is going to have a big game, he's got to throw it to somebody. And so if you want to have really big lineups, there's a correlation there. So a winning strategy tends to be stacking a quarterback and receiver. So I'm going to give you guys three, maybe two, maybe more obvious ones. And then one more of a budget kind of choice where it will allow you to pay up for some higher priced players later. So first one, Sam Ehlinger, Tariq Black from Texas against Texas Tech this weekend. So there, Texas has an implied team total in Vegas of 44 points. So you're talking about quite a few, 6+ touchdowns on the board. So you got to think slamming Sammy Ehlinger is looking at a couple, you know, probably 3 or 4 touchdown passes, assuming Vegas is right on this. I like that a lot. Anytime you can stack a high point total team, especially I think the line on this is only like 17 or something like that, so it's not a total blowout. Quarterback there tends to be a very good choice. I think they keep his Heisman campaign rolling.
Tariq Black, that's the Michigan guy.
From Michigan,
Transferred
from Michigan.
I forgot that happened. Tariq Black was pretty good at Michigan too.
And after 1 week, he is pretty good at Texas also.
Yeah. How about that? I had totally forgotten that Black had ended up at Michigan. There's so many transfers now, dude. I can't keep them all straight.
Usually you get a guy from a smaller school, maybe like a star from a mid-major.
Right.
A group five team going up. And you're like, okay, yeah, like this is a good player that I haven't really heard of before. But you've got a guy who was one of the best receivers on – a top 15, top 20 team and is now playing for a different one. You don't see that as often.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. So, all right. So keep the Sam Ehlinger Heisman train rolling. Cause you know, I'm in on that.
Yep. All right. Number two, Spencer Rattler plus Charleston Rambo. Anytime you can pick Charleston Rambo, you have to do it just cause it's up there with Storm Duck is the best names in college football right now.
Yes.
Oklahoma's playing Kansas State. They also have an implied team total of 44. So exact same thing there. They're going to be slinging the ball around. I think they're going to want Spencer Rattler to get into a little bit of a rhythm. Still, you know, a young guy in the system. But if you've played daily fantasy in college over the last few years, I can't tell you how many times that just simply picking Oklahoma's quarterback and their number one receiver have won you the week or lost you the week if you didn't pick them. I mean, some of these guys, before Charleston Rambo was number one, you, of course, had CeeDee Lamb. You had Hollywood Brown.
Yep.
Those guys would put up ridiculous numbers. I don't know if he's as good. Maybe he's really, really good. But every once in a while, these guys are going to have these games where they have, like, 10 catches for 200 yards and 4 touchdowns. I'm not saying it's this weekend, but you need to get plenty of exposure to a Spencer Rattler plus Charleston Rambo combo. I think he's a little cheaper than Ehlinger as well.
And remember, too, a little revenge factor for Oklahoma here. You know, last year, Kansas State beat them. You remember that game? Kansas State was up, I want to say, like 28 on Oklahoma. And Oklahoma nearly won. Oklahoma recovers an onside kick. They might send that game to overtime. Very, very hectic ending to that game. But I remember, you had Oklahoma, Jalen Hurts trying to rally him late, but that was Oklahoma's only loss in the regular season last year. So I'm with you on both Ehlinger and Rattler, because I love when you can get in conference openers, early season conference games that, you know, will likely be blowouts, but you would imagine that the starters are going to stay in a little bit longer than they would if it was the, you know, the directional school from the state. You're going to take on your conference team and you're going to leave those guys in. And I'm on board with both of those guys, especially Rattler.
Yeah. Yep. So they're both going to be on the expensive end. So they're going to have a high price tag, but you can combat that a little bit with a much cheaper stack of Kenny Pickett, and if he's healthy, Taysier Mack, Pitt's top receiver, supposedly is going to be back this week, and they released a depth chart. He is listed as starting, but just keep an eye on that Saturday morning. They are considerably cheaper. Pickett, I think, is like $2,000 cheaper than either Ehlinger or Rattler on DraftKings. So then he's a perfect guy to kind of combo with them. on DraftKings get to pick two quarterbacks, or it's a quarterback and then a super flex, which can be any position. So you can double stack this. You can do a Kenny Pickett, Tasty or Mac combo, do a couple lineups, one with Rattler and Rambo, one with Ellinger and Black. Have we mentioned Louisville's defense is really bad? I feel like we maybe spent a little bit of time talking about
just
that.
A little bit.
We spent some time on it. So now you have Kenny Pickett, who there are mixed reviews on. I know you are not a Kenny Pickett fan. However, Louisville's offense is really good. Their defense is really bad, so we might be looking at a lot of points here. If so, Kenny Pickett is plenty good enough to carve up Louisville's defense. And at a cheaper price tag, he is a perfect number two stack in a lineup with some of those higher price guys.
Yeah, I do like that. I don't like Kenny Pickett, but I don't like Louisville's defense even more. So you two could be Kenny Pickett against that, you know, whatever that excuse for a defense was last week for Louisville. Pitt doesn't have the same kind of athletes that I think are going to create as much trouble for Louisville as Miami did. Maybe you don't see 47 points, but could Pitt get to 30? Yeah, and I'm with you on that. I mean, you're basically at that point, you're just fading Louisville's defense and saying that whoever is throwing the ball around is going to put up some points. So I'm with you on that.
You can win a lot of money by just fading defenses and stacking teams that are playing bad defenses. I have ridden that strategy to some dollars in the past.
Well,
I want to reiterate quickly.
Yeah.
Check the injury status on Taysier Mack and everybody else. If you can't be on your phone or on your computer at like 11:45 to 11:50 on Saturday morning, do not play at all, because there are so many late scratches this year.
It's insane.
You know, every year, but especially this year, I had a pretty good lineup last week and had a zero from Kobe White from Boston College because I had no idea that he wasn't playing. I checked at like 11:30 and he was still in. I always pick him because I think it's funny because his name's Kobe White. So I, of course, picked him. But then their other receiver, Zay Flowers went off. And I was like, well, I would have preferred to pick that guy if I knew he was playing. So just make sure that if you're going to play responsibly. And by that, I mean check the status of your players up until the last minute.
While we're on that note, speaking of late scratches and guys you may want to keep an eye on, I'm just saying, maybe scroll down the list until you find Braxton Burmeister's name. That's all I'm saying. From Virginia Tech. I'll leave it at that. Let's buy the boat. Let's talk about our best bets for the weekend. Florida State, Miami, the once storied rivalry. I mean, this used to be, man, one of the three games you look forward to every year in college football. I mean, it really was. You had the Red River Shootout, you know, the Iron Bowl. Yeah. Florida State, Miami was that. I mean, it was one of the premier games in college football. And now, well, Miami looked pretty good last week, but Florida State, as you said the other day, Ross, Florida State could start 1-6. And
yep.
I don't know that they get a win on Saturday, because I love Miami here. I think Miami's defensive line with Jalen Phillips and Quincy Roche and the rest of that front four is going to eat against James Blackman and Florida State's offensive line. I think Florida State really struggles in this game. I think Miami, and this is the kind of game, I know it's a rivalry, and sometimes these games can be close even when neither team is very good or it looks like a mismatch on paper. I do feel like Miami is up for this. Front running Miami, they're going to roll into this game against Florida State, and they're going to want to send a statement. I feel like this has front running Miami blowout written all over it. I love -11. I think they win by 21, maybe even more.
Yeah, front-running Miami is a great way of putting it. This does very much feel that way, doesn't it? Second straight primetime game. It's probably still a couple too many points for me, though I do agree with you. I'm not going to bet them at -11 probably, but Miami from 11 down to 4 is the first leg of the Rossi 3 stacks I aim to tease teaser.
You just need to – come on, man. Just be a little more confident in the Canes. We're big Miami guys on this podcast now.
I bet numbers, not teams. I love getting them down to 4.
Yeah, four seems pretty. I mean, I can't see Miami only winning by a field goal. I know it's a rivalry game, but this just. Yeah. I'm just so. I mean, let's face it. transitive property, Florida State, lost to Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech then went and got blown away by UCF. UCF's good, but
you said it, not me, pal.
Oh, man, I think Florida State's really bad. All right, Louisville and Pitt. We're going to stay in the ACC. Noon kickoff, ACC Network. I'm going to take Louisville here. I think there's an overreaction to last week. I know we're dogging the defense, and we should, but Pitt's defense lost Jalen Twyman before the year. It's an okay defense. I still think Louisville can put up points on them. I'm with you on the DraftKings stuff. I think Kenny Pickett will have a day. 28 points, maybe 31 points. Could see the over hitting on this. It's only 55.5, but which I think you like as well. But I'm going to take Louisville here. I think that I think there's a little bit of an overreaction to Louisville losing as badly as they did. I'm going to take the Cardinals here cautiously, but I expect Scott Satterfield to have those guys trying to wipe the blood out of their mouth after what happened last weekend. So I'll take Louisville cautiously here, +3.
Yeah, and you already hit on it. My favorite bet here is the over 55.5.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that.
I'm going to keep playing the angle that Louisville defense is really bad. But I also agree with you about Louisville +3. Again, I'm not going to bet that one, but this conveniently, I swear that I'm not going to do this with every game, but this is teaser leg number 2.
You're just going to keep teasing my bets.
I told you I'm not doing this for every game. but this is teaser number 2. We're up to Louisville +10.
All right, next game, I've got to pick, you don't. Alabama -27.5. I spoke my piece on Alabama. Missouri, if you're a Missouri fan, just go take up gardening. Like just something else on the weekend for you guys this year. It's not going to be fun. Missouri's schedule is absolutely insane. And Eli Drinkwitz, first year at Mizzou, I think he's walking into a tough situation. They lost a lot off of last year's group two, which already was struggling. I think this is a long-term rebuild at Missouri. And Alabama, Nick Saban takes his foot off the gas against the group of five schools, the small schools. But when he gets into SEC play, which he's jumping right in this year, they go full bore. And if there was ever a team that is itching to get out on the football field and play, it's got to be Alabama. I think they come in. I think they cover this number in the first quarter, maybe the first 20 minutes. But I expect this game to be 28-0 quickly. And I don't think Alabama pulls their starters soon enough. I expect the starters to get at least a 42-point lead, maybe 49. They can hang on three touchdowns from that. I don't think Missouri is very good at all on either side of the ball, and you know how I feel about Alabama. So I almost went yacht lock of the week on this one, but that's a lot of points to lay for a yacht lock, so I'm going to stay away from that. But I still like that at 27.5. Another game with a 27.5 point spread. Georgia on the road against Arkansas. The Dogs are starting Dwan Mathis. Sounds like JT Daniels. Turns out he's not cleared to play. What a weird situation they've got going on at quarterback.
Yeah.
But Arkansas, first game with Sam Pittman. Felipe Franks sighting, the former Florida quarterback.
Love
he's
it.
Now at Arkansas.
Love it.
The rare inside the conference transfer eligible immediately. That's insane. So we're going to see Felipe Franks go up against Georgia. How do you feel about this? That's a lot of points, 27.5 to lay.
It is a lot of points. And before I knew that Dwan Mathis was starting, which candidly was like a minute ago when you just said it, I already loved the under 52.5 in this game.
Yeah.
Because I think Georgia's defense is capital E elite. And I think their offense is, well, now I don't really know. I think they're going to run the ball super well for sure. There'll be a classic Georgia game, I think. 52.5 is just a lot of points in a game where I don't think Arkansas is going to score very much. And I question how much firepower Georgia is going to have right off the bat. So it would not surprise me at all if this game was like 35-7-ish.
Yep.
Which is right about, you know, the 27.5 line, and would give us the under by a full 10 points.
So I don't have this number in front of me, but just looking at the implied total, it looks as if Vegas is calling for like a 40-13 type game, just implied numbers, right? So I'm thinking Arkansas's team total is probably 13 or 13.5, I think. If it is, I actually like Arkansas team under here. I think that that offense was built with Chad Morris in mind, which was a complete disaster. Felipe Franks is nothing special. He's fine, but I don't think Franks is some sort of gunslinger that's going to come out with the limited weapons that they have and against that defense be able to score first game of the year. Could be a little bit, you know, could see some mistakes. I don't think that that offense is even going to be what they want it to be. So I actually like Arkansas's team under here. I think Georgia might shut them out or hold them to single digits. So keep an eye on that. But my official pick is the under as well. And it is my yacht lock of the week. I'm locking it in.
Whoa.
Yeah. I'm because of everything you said, Georgia, brand new quarterback. Gonna be, I know Todd Monken wants to open up that offense. And maybe Dwan Mathis totally, you know, is this, you know, best kept secret and they love Mathis, but let's face it. He's the third quarterback that they have turned to before they've even played a game. So
right.
I'm not expecting this offense to look like a well-oiled machine. And with a heavy dose of the run game with Zamir White and the rest of that crew, I think the defense, like I said, I love the under for Arkansas, but I love the under for the team or for the entire game as well. 52.5. To me, I think this is 38-0, 38-3, something like that.
Love that.
I don't think Arkansas dude, honestly, Arkansas might not cross the 50 in this game. It is that much of a mismatch on that side.
That's bold, but if you're going to toss out the yacht lock
moniker
there, you have to say some bold stuff.
Again, if you're an Arkansas fan, you might want to take up gardening this fall. All right, Mississippi State and LSU. I like Mississippi State in this game, Ross. We briefly talked about the Bulldogs earlier. I'm not convinced that Mike Leach is going to work in the SEC when it comes to competing. I mean, they're certainly not going to do it this year, but just even down the road, competing for the division. But you know what? LSU, you know, Steve Ensminger certainly going to try to retain a lot of what they did last year with Joe Brady there. He's gone helping call plays for LSU. Miles Brennan,
yep.
Super talented player. I think LSU is still really good. Jacob Emery, former five-star running back. They're not going to be hurting for talent, but they did lose a lot at receiver, and I could see this offense having some issues, just kind of getting their feet settled. Could see some sloppy football from them. I think Mississippi State with KJ Costello, who's an NFL prospect at quarterback, and I love him playing for Mike Leach. Kylan Hill, who is an All-SEC running back, maybe even an All-American running back. They'll score. I really do think they will score. LSU lost so many players to opt-outs on the defensive side, and they just lost guys to the draft last year. I mean, Grant Delpit is gone.
Right. Yep.
Christian Fulton is gone. Patrick Queen is gone. So while there's still plenty of talent on that LSU team, and I think they're going to be fine, week one against an offense like that, that's pretty hard to stop if you haven't seen it before, give me Mississippi State in the points. Plus 16.5. I'll take them to cover. I still think LSU wins by 10 or 14 points. But, you know, to quote the great Lee Corso, closer than the experts think. Let's go to Kentucky and Auburn. Noon kick, SEC Network. We sort of touched on this one a little bit last week. I'll lean to you here, though. Auburn, the line is now at 8, -8 for Auburn against Kentucky.
Yeah. So I don't love that as a bet the number guy, but I am still going to roll with Auburn. I'm going to roll with them at -8, and that, I mean, if you've been following along for years, Auburn, anybody at -8 is almost an automatic teaser. It's like if you get a 10 or 11 in blackjack, auto double.
Got a double.
You got a double on the -8 or -9. That's just the teaser zone. So Auburn, you are exactly right. They lost a lot. Have you seen how they have recruited, especially on defense over the last few years?
They've got dudes. They got a lot of dudes.
Dudes. And it's the only way to describe it.
Just guys being dudes.
For sure. Just guys being dudes out there. I am a little higher on their offense, I think, than you. We talk about Bo Nix. I think Bo Nix is pretty good. I think what he did as a true freshman, playing a really tough schedule, will do him very well this year. Have you seen Anthony Schwartz, I think is the guy's name?
Good receiver. They expect big things from him.
Legitimately one of the fastest people in the world, I think. he's like a world-class sprinter.
Yep.
And has been focusing on football now for a little bit. And I mean, look, that's one example. They are absolutely expecting big things from him, but he's one of a couple guys that they have that I think don't get talked about a lot. You hear a lot about Bo Nix. You heard a lot about the defense last year. I think Auburn is sneaky talented. They lost a lot, for sure. I don't feel great about 8. I wish it were 6.5 or 7. I'd bet it like crazy. But I think having a Bo Nix coming back, they will not take as long to get going maybe as you would think from a team who lost as much as they did. Just having that quarterback, the dude's a winner. It's at home. I like Auburn -8. I really like them -1. I think they win this game.
So Auburn has historically come out of the gate strong. Last 2 years, they've gotten big wins against Pac-12 teams to open the year. Last year, they beat Oregon, famously Bo Nix, game-winning touchdown. They knock off the Ducks and Justin Herbert. 2 years ago, they beat Washington in Atlanta, a game that probably wasn't even as close as the score would indicate. Even remember going back to 2017, they played Georgia Southern to start the year, but then they played Clemson tough in 2017. Yep. Lost 14-6, really weird game, but defenses were certainly playing well that night. And then going back the year before that, they played Clemson at home and also played them tough. So Gus Malzahn's teams have historically played well in season openers. Heck, you could go back the year before that. They played Louisville in Atlanta and won that game. That was a decent Louisville team. So Gus has those guys playing well early when they're healthy. But as I said on Tuesday, I'm nervous about the lack of experience for Auburn against a very experienced Kentucky team. You've got a lot of talent. The more talented side is Auburn, probably by a lot. But when you replace Marlon Davidson and Derek Brown and Nick Coe on the defensive line, Noah Igbinoghene, my man.
Thank you.
The corner who's playing for the Dolphins right now. When you lose those dudes, and then Kentucky's offensive line has 4 starters back, 2 guys who made first team preseason all conference. You get Terry Wilson back, who has a lot of experience and is a tremendous quarterback. I don't think he's anything spectacular, but a very good quarterback. And 7 guys back on the defense. It's a really well coached. Like Mark Stoops is a very good coach that has Kentucky playing as good as they've played year over year in decades.
I
really think Kentucky. I'm not saying they'll upset them because Auburn is so talented. It feels like they should just pull this out sheerly on being the more talented side. But I like Kentucky +8. I like Kentucky +8. Noon kickoff too. You don't get the night game in Jordan-Hare. Could be a sleepy start. I'm gonna take Kentucky to cover this one. I'm gonna look like a moron on Saturday night if Auburn goes into this thing and it displays their strength like they should, but I'm going to take the more experienced side. I'm going to take the better coached side. The coaching advantage in this game to me is Stoops. And maybe if Malzahn wins, he gets another extension. But to me, I'm taking Kentucky here plus the points. We'll see how it goes. Two-way teaser zone. Two-way teaser zone right here, Ross. This could be a tease Auburn to -1, tease Kentucky to +15. We want to get really weird. That's where we do it.
We've said it so many times, there's almost nothing more fun than doing that. Just trying to keep that game in that juicy 14-point zone. It's awesome. Look, Josh, my only advice to you, just be careful how many Natty Bo Nixes you're drinking if you want Kentucky to win, because you crack too many of those, the juju, unfortunately, is going to be on Bo's side, and you might just kind of jinx yourself there.
I know. I was so proud of my pun. I had to go with Natty Bo Nix. I was so proud of it, even though I really like Kentucky to at least keep it close, but I can't go against my Natty Bo Nixes. We'll see which side wins on that. All right, man. Yep. We got a few more here. Florida Ole Miss noon kick on ESPN. The Gators laying 13.5 against Lane Kiffin. The Lane Train makes his first stop against Florida. What do you think?
So I got some inside sources close to the Ole Miss program, which is really just my brother-in-law who went to Ole Miss.
Okay.
And he told me earlier this week to hammer the Gators.
Okay.
I'm not going to do that because I believe in the Lane Train. But 13.5 is an enticing number to get us below 7 in a tease. So I like Florida down to 6.5 in a teaser. I also like the under in this game from 57 to 64. Evidently, and Lane might have actually said this, in the last scrimmage that Ole Miss had, they like their offense, I think, literally could not get a first down. And I don't think it's because Ole Miss's defense is that good. I think Florida's off. Florida will be good. We've talked about Florida. They're fine. But they're not this explosive offense traditionally. It's going to run up a ton of points. So the under actually opened at 64 in this game and has already been bet down to 57.
Wow.
So I'm just going to buy the points back to where it started and take Florida and the under as legs 4 and 5 of my teaser.
It feels like you've lost the value, right? Like this is where the sharps get in and get the number, and now you've lost any value. I mean, it's been bet down so low. This is another one. This is not an official pick, but if I get it right, I'm going to pretend it was. This could be an Ole Miss team under. Implied total right around 21 in this game. Florida's defense, it's not Georgia's, but it's not terribly far off from where Georgia is. Yeah. And against an offense, it sounds like it can't even get past its own team. I'm going to take I would love to maybe dabble in that team under. Maybe Florida holds Ole Miss low. I like where you're going though, teasing it, because Florida's offense should be really good. Kyle Trask played great last year at the end of the year. Kyle Pitts is one of the best tight ends in America. They got dudes all over the map on offense. I'm going to stay away from it myself, but if I had to, I like the Ole Miss team under there. Asking them to score 3 touchdowns on that defense, I think, even with John Rhys Plumlee, is a lot. Let's go to 2 more games in the ACC, Ross. We got Duke and UVA. I'll start. I originally, my gut said Virginia. My gut said, you know, Duke looked awful last week against Boston College, who I think is the second worst team in the league. And, you know, you lose 26-6. I don't have a ton of confidence in you against hardly anybody else, let alone Virginia, a team that even without the loss of, or with the loss of Bryce Perkins, played in the Coastal, played in the ACC Championship last year. But do a little digging into how Duke lost last week.
Oh, yeah.
5 turnovers. They have been sacked 9 times through 2 games, many of them coming last week, but 5 turnovers. They had, Ross, so they lost 26-6. It's not that the game was close, but 6 possessions inside Boston College's 35-yard line last week, 0 points. Not a single point came when they had a possession inside the 35 last week. 3 times they turned it over, including a Chase Bryce fumble, a couple of other turnovers. They missed a field goal badly, and they had one drive where they had like 30 yards in penalties that put them back all the way on their own 35-yard line. So those are the types of things that don't usually translate from one week to the next. Like, those are kind of fluky. So while even if you – I mean, let's just say they score on 4 of those 6 possessions. Let's say they get 2 touchdowns, 2 field goals. It's a tie game with them in Boston College. That's still not great because Boston College is not a good team. So still not a great performance from Duke, even with all of the turnovers and the weirdness.
Sure.
But I think that Duke's getting a little bit undersold here because we just don't know which Duke team's going to show up. 2 weeks ago, they take a really good Notre Dame team that just obliterated South Florida last week. Duke, I mean, was in that game in the fourth quarter. So I'm gonna cautiously buy a little bit of Duke stock here. I'm going to take them plus 5.5. Wouldn't be surprised if they went outright. We don't know anything about Virginia's offense. Brandon Armstrong, we've never really seen before. That team was carried by Bryce Perkins a year ago. We think Virginia's defense should be good. I expect it to be good. But I'm gonna take Duke. I'm going to say last week was a little bit more of a Duke fluke and that they're going to be back in business this week. I'll cover them 5.5. I'll take them plus 5.5. But I would not be surprised either if they just keep flip-flopping back and forth like Michael Scott getting vasectomies, keep snip-snapping back and forth between good game, bad game, and this week we get a good Duke game because I could see it happening. Crazy stat, too, by the way. They're 2-8 since they beat Virginia Tech last year. They embarrassed Virginia Tech on a Friday night, national TV, and since then they've won 2 games. They beat Miami, which Miami lost to virtually everybody at the end of last year, and they beat Georgia Tech. That's it. So Duke needs a win. I'm gonna say they keep it close this weekend.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I'm not gonna bet this game. I initially was. My pick would be UVA.
Did I talk you out of it?
No.
Okay.
I talked myself out of it with how much I liked some other bets.
Yeah.
But I think I like UVA. The home game thing means really nothing, but I think Bronco is just a very good coach. And I know that is the simplest, hottest take one could. Bronco is good at coaching football.
He's good.
UVA is a very disciplined team. They're going to come out. They're going to run the ball as best they can. Brendan Armstrong's not going to make any mistakes to a frustrating degree. They're not going to commit any penalties. And I think they end up winning some kind of incredibly boring game, like 20-14.
Yeah.
So I don't love the line. I think if I had to pick it, I would pick UVA 5.5.
Boring is a great way to put it. 4 o'clock, ACC Network. Man, I miss Jefferson Pilot. Because this has Tim Brandt and who else would have been the announcers on these games back in the day? Rest his soul. Mike Jaminski would have, or no, not Jaminski.
Yeah,
that is not right. We're gonna have to cut that. Mike Hogwood, rest his soul.
Hogwood, there it is.
Mike Hogwood would have loved to have been in Charlottesville on Saturday for Duke Virginia at 4 o'clock.
Yep.
Oh man, yep. The Hogwood special. We might have to do that. We might have to do every week the most boring ACC game of the week, the Mike Hogwood Memorial Special. Man.
I love it.
What a guy. Oh, man, Mike Hogwood. All right, last one. NC State, Virginia Tech, our alma mater. Here we go. Without going into too much detail, because there's only so much I can share, this is going to be a weird night. Justin Fuente said earlier this week he hopes they'll have enough guys to play. Where there's smoke, there's fire. There's a lot of weird stuff coming out of rumors that coming out of Blacksburg right now. Nobody really knows what we're going to see from Virginia Tech. Joe Giglio from Sports Talk Radio, ESPN Radio in Raleigh. Mm-hmm. He tweeted today, this could be a battle of backup quarterbacks. So
love it.
We'll see. I'm staying as far away from this game as possible. Because I just have no clue what to expect, especially from Virginia Tech, who this should have been – well, they were supposed to play 2 weeks ago, and they get this postponed, Virginia postponed. I just know Virginia Tech wants to get on the field. If it weren't for all the noise, I actually would love Virginia Tech here. I think they would dominate NC State. But because of all the – just the weird rumors and Devin Hunter suspended for Tech too, I'm staying away from this game. I can't touch it.
Well – Josh, that's where you and I differ as it comes to betting on Tech. You see the chaos and you run away from it. I run towards it. This is all the more reason. I love a good weird game like this. I mean, this is gambling. This is not me basing this pick on anything other than I will be rooting really hard for Virginia Tech against NC State, and I am betting with my heart on this one. So as a Virginia Tech grad who grew up a diehard North Carolina fan, there's no love lost in the Three Stacks household for NC State. So I want Virginia Tech to win this game probably as badly as any game this year. And the fact that it's just a complete crapshoot, like who's coming out of that tunnel on Saturday night,
I mean,
makes it so much more fun. So I'm treating this like buying a lottery ticket. We're taking Virginia Tech 6.5. We're putting Virginia Tech as the last leg in the teaser at 0.5. We're going all in on the Hokies blind.
I love it. I absolutely love it. This is like just going and just put it all on black. Just let's let it ride, baby. Let's see what happens. Let's get weird. No better way to get weird than on a Saturday. You know what? I might, if we have a good day Saturday and I'm feeling good by 8 o'clock, come kickoff, I might throw down on the Hokies just for the heck of it. Like, who knows? Let's just do like you said, just straight up gamble. That's what we're doing at this point. there's no other way to put it. So quickly, Ross, let's recap what you got. You've got four picks against the spread, and you got a couple of teasers. What do you have again?
Yeah, the four we're gonna put on the record here: Louisville, Pitt over 55.5, We'll put Virginia Tech 6.5. We'll put it on the record.
Okay. Let's go.
Auburn -8, and then UGA Arkansas under 52.5. And then the teaser we're rolling with is Miami down to -4, Louisville to +10, Auburn to -1, Florida to -6.5, Florida Ole Miss under 64, and Virginia Tech to +0.5.
You are 6-1 this year, man. You are kicking my butt. I need a good week to catch up here. You and I are different on a bunch of these games, so something's got to give. I got Miami -11. I got Louisville +3, Alabama -27.5. I got the under in Georgia, Arkansas. I got +16.5 in Mississippi State. I got a little crazy. I'm not going to lie. I'm excited. There's a lot of college football. I'm not even halfway through.
It feels like a normal Saturday.
It really does. Kentucky +8, Duke +5.5. That's it. That's like 8 or 9 games. I mean,
that's the board.
I'm drinking from a fire hose this weekend, Ross.
I love it. You're also drinking some serious Natty Bo Nix this weekend.
We're drinking.
I will be drinking on a pier in Nag's Head.
Oh.
I'm going on vacation with the family this weekend. I will be gone for a week, but I will be watching college football from the pier, eating some 10-cent peel and eat shrimp, drinking some cheap beers. It's going to be an awesome Saturday.
There's no better way to do it. Well, cheers to you and I both. Some Natty Bo Nixes will be had, and we'll see who comes out on top this week. All right, man. Well, hey, that's going to do it for us. Good one in the books. Good week. We got the best week of the year so far. So many games. We got 36 hours until kickoff. Hopefully we get there. God knows what's going to happen between now and then, the way this season's going, but let's hope we make it. Ross, it's a pleasure. Enjoy Nag's Head. We'll catch up with you next week. And, yeah, go Hokies, I guess.
And also with you, Stan. Adios.
All right, see ya.
See ya.